RWingUpIt'sOnOli.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RUWitsOnOli.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Miracles when you believe. And that was When You Believe by Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston, baby. Happy
A little special for this week.
It's the third night of Passover, and this is The Struggle. The
Struggle. Okay. I'm Alyssa Pariah.
I'm Olivia Pace.
We're back. That song was requested by our friend Alana, who was celebrating Passover, who had never heard that song.
Oof.
So, like, and she's very close to us. Y'all know Alana Goldman from Jewish Voice for Peace. She's friends of the show, very close with Olivia and I. We love her dearly.
But she's wonderful in the city, prolific Jewish anti-Zionist activist.
Yes,
she really is it.
She was arrested at the ICE detention center for the Never Again action. To point out the similarities between ICE and the Gestapo.
Mm-hmm.
We love her, and she's been out here fighting for Palestinian equal rights for a long time, big supporter of BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. So we love you, Alana.
Wants you to all know that, the message of Passover is overcoming the persecution of the Jewish people, and that her request is in honor of that you continue to figure out how you can dedicate your time to fighting for the liberation of all other oppressed people, because if it can happen to some of us, it can happen to any of us, and it can happen again as right. long as these oppressive forces that we talk about on this show remain.
Oh, please tear it down. Thank you so much, Olivia. Okay, see, that's because you're drinking at home, isolating. And so have I. So thank you very much for giving me a reason. So clink, clink, honey.
Clink. 25 of quarantine.
So last week we learned that we cannot call in to the station. Shout out to Tammy, who was doing the board opping. Between the three of us, me, you, and the board op, it just wasn't. The quality wasn't good and the calls were dropping, so we'll do it on Zoom. Everybody else is doing everything on Zoom now.
I know, it's really wild. Zoom is making a lot of money, baby. $15 a month for a Zoom line. It's wild.
But is it like Netflix where you have users so I can just use yours?
Yeah, I mean, I have a Zoom line and I can call anybody. But
Or like, can I use yours when you're busy? When you're kidding.
You say?
What's that? When you're passed out drunk?
I'm not getting drunk.
I know. I'm just playing. I'm sorry.
As Alyssa would say, Olivia loves to drink. When I first met you, and I was. When I first met you, when I was 18 years old, she would say. Yeah, she would offer me a drink and she would say, yes, Olivia loves to drink, baby. That's one of the things I love about her.
Oh my God.
Me, I'm like, I graduated high school in June.
Oh my God. If something tragic ever happens to you that involves alcohol, I'm going to remember you telling me this.
No, it's genetic.
Oh my God, I put that drink in her hand. I was encouraging it.
No, I've been drinking for a solid 4 months before I met you.
Oh, well then.
Whew. Oh, God. Okay. Anyway, we're here. We can't call in, but we're here. We're on Zoom. It's quarantine. Everything's okay. Different. We're going through a big cultural shift. We're still here.
Yeah. Okay. So we got to talk about Bernie dropping out.
Yeah. People are. I mean,
what are your hot takes?
I don't have any hot takes. I have takes. I feel like they're the same takes that it was the last time that Bernie dropped out. I really empathize with how disheartened people are. This is like a blow to people. Like, to a lot of people, this is like the blow to the progressive movement. And I don't agree with that, but I empathize with that. I wanted Bernie to win. Like, I'm chronically ill. I have cystic fibrosis. We have to say it every show for the KBOO gods. I have cystic fibrosis.
It's not the cable guys, it's just, you know, they got on me. I don't know if I ever told you this. When I first started at cable, they got on me about the buttons that we have in studio. Don't you miss the studio?
The cough button, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, so they told me, like, if you ever cough, hit this button so that people don't hear you call. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, I better not call. But then when you came on, what am I going to do? I'm going to tell you not to cough? I don't think so. I yell at people when they look at you funny for coughing.
Anytime, anything. You yell at people when they look at me funny for any reason, even if I'm wrong.
I don't, yeah, no one can ever mess with you, no, that's true.
Sometimes I'll ask Alyssa if somebody talked about badly about me to her, and she looks at me and she goes, if you're watching the video, you'll see, she goes, oh, you think they're going to talk about you to me? No! I have cystic fibrosis, and as somebody who has cystic fibrosis, who has very expensive medications that I need every single day of my life, yeah, I absolutely wanted everything that Bernie was putting forward in his platform. I, like, deeply. So, and we haven't, like, seen anybody like him run for office, run for president since Eugene Debs, and it's a big deal, and yeah, it's a big deal, and it feels like a blow to a lot of people. And my only take is just that, like, electoralism is a electoral politics, and like that venue is a tactic, but it's not the answer. It can't be the answer because it's embedded in a system that is inherently oppressive, whether or not every single person in that system is operating in good or bad faith. And the wins that we make in the realm of electoral politics are just leverage. They're not the end all be all. The end all be all is workers coming together and taking power for themselves from their bosses, from the people who are oppressing them. But yeah, I feel sad for the people who feel really disheartened, and it's not fun. I don't love it. That's all. That's my only take on it.
Well, the people who are the most sad are people for whom Bernie was their entree into activism, organizing, fighting for a better world, or imagining a better world, even. What was it that Naomi Klein said, that Bernie helped to break the neoliberal spell that people have been under?
Yeah.
Ideas of market domination were so much more pervasive before Bernie started, talking about his social democratic calls, right? Like, it inspired a lot of people. Those are the people who I think are most distraught, not you or me or a lot of people who listen to KBOO, who were thoroughly and fully radicalized before Bernie came around.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, in all the propaganda around it, everybody's saying, right, like, he lost the election, but he's winning the ideological debate. And, like, that is the important debate. That is the important debate, because if we understand that, like, action by workers against those who are oppressing them, against those who own the means of production, is the way forward, then the ideological debate is the one that matters the most. And he did win that, and everybody knows that. And so... It's hard.
Everybody under 50 or in every state,
yeah,
won the vote for people under 50.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, ideological and the generational debate.
Yes, which those are important debates. So that's how I feel about it. I'm not happy about Joe. I don't trust the end of that man's pinky nail. I can't stand him. He's out of his mind. That man is out of his mind on many levels, which we know. He's just awful. And especially with all the stuff around.
I don't like the way he touches and smells women and girls.
I mean, we know he's a predator, Tara Reid.
Yeah.
Oh. Joe Biden staffer, who, this is a whole other, this could be a whole show in and of itself. I've been talking about this for a
couple. Break it down, you brought it up.
Yeah, Tara Reid, former staffer under Joe Biden, I believe she was a staffer when he was a senator, and she was in her like mid-20s around then. I don't know the exact age, but it was a while ago. It was in the 90s, and she was young, a young person. And Joe Biden sexually assaulted her while she was at work. and said some very nasty, awful things to her and did some really nasty, awful things to her. And she recently, bravely came forward, not easy to do under any circumstances, even when the person who assaulted you is a nobody, seemingly a nobody with no power. So imagine how hard that would be to do if it's this like beloved, like grandpa, former VP. And she wanted to take up the case through the Time's Up Foundation. And they rejected. The Time's Up Foundation is it's Time's Up Legal Fund, and it's a fund that tries to like throw money towards and sponsor women who are taking up like Me Too cases, like cases that revolve around sexual violence. And as many of us know, if you don't know, the Me Too movement started by Tarana Burke, which it just holds near that like people who experience gendered violence, sexual violence, need to feel brave and emboldened to be able to come forward and tell their stories, because the issue is so much more pervasive than people have thought it to be. And the Time's Up Legal Fund rejected taking on her case. They said they couldn't do it. They said that taking up a case against a presidential candidate and a former vice president would potentially harm their status as a nonprofit, which is already not a great reason to me, but sure. But when you look deeper, The Intercept reported on this. I believe the firm is something like S. Knickerbocker or something. Basically, the firm that they work with, the Time's Up Legal Fund, the executive manager of that firm is has been one of like the lead managers and leaders in Joe Biden's campaign. There's this direct link between Joe Biden and the Time's Up Legal Fund, and it's just like the most disgusting like identity politics from above, like co-optation of a genuine grassroots movement. Like Me Too is like a genuine movement that comes from like a former like social worker, counselor, Black woman from the South, like a genuine movement that is genuinely.
She's from the Bronx. She's not from the South.
She's from the South?
She's from the Bronx.
I thought I didn't know that. I thought she was from the South. Mm-mm. Regardless.
Listen, I sound like Remy Ma the way I'm going off.
No, she's from New York.
The ex-borough. What's good?
No. but regardless, like, Black woman, not somebody who has a lot of power, doing genuine work with genuine intentions, working class, like
she was just doing like direct support stuff for young women.
And these white celebrities have co-opted this entire thing, and now we have women like this who can't, who like, there's these resources that have been set up in the wake of the movement through Time's Up that can't be utilized for women who are being marginalized and oppressed and have violence committed against them by these powerful people. And like, what's even the point? It's disgusting. And I don't think that rich women don't deserve to get justice for sexual violence committed against them, but I don't think they should be at the front of the movement. Sorry, that's just my opinion. I don't think they deserve to be at the front, because this is what you get.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot. Absolutely.
Well, what is your forecast? What do you think will happen from this? Anything?
I mean, I don't think that it's been getting as much coverage as it should, because even well-intentioned people are going to turn their heads away from it, because people truly believe like the vote blew no matter what. Like, especially with Bernie dropping out. Frankly, I'm not impressed with Bernie dropping out. I think he should have stayed the course. I didn't think he was going to win, but I think he should have stayed the course for the sake of having a viable alternative on the table to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. At this point, like, if it's not him, it's Joe Biden. So, like, what are you doing dropping out? Because Joe Biden is an awful person. I do not trust him, and I do not like him, and I think he's worse than Hillary, though it doesn't really matter. Like, I'm just so disheartened by everything about him. And And now that he is the only viable option from the Democratic Party, I don't know how people are going to be willing to take up the case for Tara Reid, who was sexually assaulted by him, because making his faults clear just makes him less likely to beat Trump. And that's what people want to focus on right now, which I understand, but I feel that again, the realm of electoral politics makes our scope and the goals we can reach really narrow and small.
Yeah. That interview with her on The Intercept is on the Intercepted podcast.
Yeah.
For people who are looking for new stuff to listen to. If you don't already subscribe to the Intercepted podcast, do it. And maybe I'll see if we can get that interview played on cable too.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. It was really inspiring. She's a really powerful woman and had a lot of important things to say. And yeah, it's so disappointing, like, just how people think that they are being righteous when they vote for the Democratic Party, when they like swallow their pride, I'm putting that in quotes, and vote for Democrats and vote for people that they don't trust in. But like, these people are also oppressive. These people are also completely capable of committing violence. These people are also not looking out for our best interests. And even though it feels, in quotes, like it feels small, emboldening Joe Biden is putting down this woman who literally did nothing wrong. Like, I don't know how else to talk about it. Yeah.
Also, just get ready to remind people a lot that not voting is a way to register how you feel about this system.
Yeah.
So don't let people get you down too much when they get on you about supporting Biden to beat Trump. They're gonna say that their analysis is at that level. Don't let them drag you down, you know, when they start getting on that. Like, not participating in voting is a way to communicate how you feel about the system. And I'm not mad at people who feel like they are not presented with options that feel meaningful to them. That's real. And if the options feel meaningful to you, then great. Get on your soapbox and make your case for your guy.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to do that. I'm not about to get on the horn and start telling people support Biden because Trump is worse. No.
Yeah. And be very careful about who you're saying that to. Like, who are you saying that to? Because Joe Biden represents so many important things to a lot of like marginalized people who are privy to like the awful things that he's done. He like,
we talked about the crime bill on this show before.
He basically wrote,
my childhood was like really like I had some deep ruptures, and like I'm sure some of that stuff is like still unpacked, you know. Like I haven't even begun to do that work of having to be raised by people and being around people who are in and out of the system because of the you know, the tough on crime mantra that he helped him drum into the psyche of America. Meanwhile, you know, hurting children and people from poor working class black and brown neighborhoods who have to see their loved ones in and out of jail and prison and can't finish probation and parole, you know, all of that stuff. Like, that's what I associate with him.
Yeah. I mean, he basically wrote the Three Strikes Law. He was on the International Affairs Committee and I think the Senate when they voted on going to war in Iraq. So he's not just like a person who voted in favor of the war in Iraq, but as somebody who actually helped to orchestrate invading Iraq. He's a bad guy. His whole career is based off of these like chummy relationships he's built with the worst of the worst on the right. Like, that's not impressive to me. And that's
how he's proud of that.
That's what people try to sell him on, when people try to sell, because there's very little to sell about him. besides that he just, there was like a funny meme about him in 2016. But when people try to sell him, they're like, oh, he's bipartisan, Republicans love him, Democrat, like, I can't remember who said it, but like,
about the memes of him now being a predator, they're not talking about those.
Well, the enemies do that, you make say
grabbing on little girls and sniffing them and penning them in with other men in corners and you just look.
No, I didn't see that.
So
yeah, I don't trust anybody who Republicans like you. That tells me all, everything I need to know. Like, the enemies you make are very important. It's not a good, it's not a good thing for everyone to like you. Yeah. It's absolutely not.
So we'll see how some of the Bernie activists politically mature in the next period. Don't count them out. You know, they're perceiving the world just like we are. And you know, if they don't have a solid Marxist analysis, that's okay. They're still living the ravages of capitalism, and understand that they have to play a role in changing their own lives. Like,
yeah, and I mean, the organizing that we saw after Trump won was amazing. Like, there were some amazing concrete wins that came directly after the Trump presidency came into power. And I feel like the same will happen here. Whether you vote or not, I feel like people are, I feel that people are more disheartened by Joe Biden than they were by Hillary Clinton. People were like really, people seemed very able to swallow voting for Hillary Clinton. Not a lot of people, not everybody, but I feel like I'm observing more people being like, wow, voting for Joe Biden feels really, really bad. That feels really, really yucky. This is not right. And we had the same situation last time, but I think, I mean, it's the same election over again. Like, it's the same thing the second, like 4 years later. So I think it's just further sticking people into that there needs to be organizing behind any of this, which is good.
You know, it's a challenge because we don't know exactly how that's going to look. So, you know, things are really, like, nothing is for sure. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Especially right now.
With the coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
Oh, my God.
Olivia. What she says.
Every time I hear that, I think of you.
Coronavirus. I also like the video where she says, "Government, government, government." Have you seen?
This is Cardi B that we're talking about, everybody. And Olivia is
Lisa Almanzar
is one of the biggest Cardi fans that I know. So yeah, every time I hear that, I'm like, yep, yeah, that's.
I love Cardi B. She's not perfect. She's a rich woman, and that's no good. Wealth isn't great, but.
She's going to be giving some of it away with Fashion Nova.
First of all, Fashion Nova, baby. I could rock designer, but this Fashion Nova fit. Cardi B, Belcalis Almanzar is giving away $1,000 every hour for 42 days to any old broad like me who's on fashionnova.com who needs a little bit of coin. Fashion Nova and Cardi B, literally more efficient than the federal government because I haven't gotten my Trump check. And I haven't gotten unemployment, baby. So I'm going to Fashion Nova.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's really coming. Or if it is, my grim picture of the future is that it's taking a long time on purpose so that when people start dropping like flies and dying, you know, a dead person can't cash a check, right? So like...
Wow, I haven't even thought about that.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, people are on the brink of.
I mean, yeah, they're doing everything delayed. I saw on Democracy Now. I didn't watch all of it today, sadly, but I saw in the part that I did watch that they finally, after talking about it for literally weeks, have General Motors set up to make ventilators and they will get out 6,000 ventilators, like a fraction of what is needed. New York literally needed like tens of thousands of ventilators weeks ago.
Oh, we're going to talk about New York, honey, and AOC's interview on Democracy Now.
Very good. But General Motors is slated to get out 6,000 ventilators by the end of this month, and we're supposed to hit the peak in terms of cases and deaths by the end of this month, and then it's supposed to taper off in the summer. So they finally got their stuff together, barely, like not even really, in terms of producing these ventilators, which they have been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks. They were able to pass the stimulus bill in a second that again, AOC talked about it, that allows corporations to gain trillions and trillions of dollars. But getting these ventilators out that they just need to facilitate in terms of like getting a company to produce them, they couldn't do it, and they're not going to get them out. 6,000 again, like not enough at all. By the time it peaks, people are going to die. Like that 100,000, 200,000 they talked about, like it's gonna be around there in terms of COVID-19 deaths. But yeah, let's talk about New York.
So there were a couple of interviews this week that, let me get my notes here. There are some organizations, the New Sanctuary Movement, New York Communities for Change, and Make the Road. These are organizations in New York City that Amy had people on or people talking about them this week, including AOC, and that really made me very happy. So Make the Road and New York Communities for Change are organizations that do work in the district that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez represents. So she was speaking to the issues that they were bringing forward, and the main thing is that the neighborhoods that they represent in Queens, New York, especially Elmhurst, Queens, New York, is like the hardest hit place in the country right now.
Yeah.
And it's also the most multicultural area, like in the country, and one of the most multicultural places in the world. So a lot of poor and working class Black and Brown people are concentrated there, and that's where this thing is worse. So even though I had a deep and terrible feeling that somehow the death toll was going to be pushed down the race and class ladder, I didn't know how it was going to come, and like this is what it looks like. So I'm glad that AOC went on and was speaking like an activist and not like a politician.
She really did.
It sounded a lot more like asking people to get involved and to support these organizations. And I think that it's important that people do. She also talked about the New Sanctuary Movement, which was, still is, a pro-immigrant organization that originally was meant to support people who were going in for ICE check-ins when there was a possibility that they would get deported. They got a tip about ICE officers at LaGuardia Airport, which is right by Elmhurst Hospital, where, like, it's been hit the hardest.
Yeah.
And that's why AOC went there. And do you remember that video of her like yelling at them and accosting them as they were trafficking 6 children from Texas? And it was an important moment in, you know, people seeing with their own eyes that ICE is trafficking children.
During a pandemic, into the hardest hit area in the country, with the most cases and the highest death toll.
So the people who are getting so sick there, of course, you know, either you're some sort of, you know, race science peddler, you know, and you think that, you know, coronavirus has some sort of connection to melanin. Of course, it doesn't. It has to do with whether or not you are in a high transmission area. So these people have to go to work. They work the low wage jobs, places that aren't getting closed down, fast food places, groceries, like, you know, grocery workers. They are still expected to go to work and to get there by public transit like they would at any other time. So they're in high traffic areas, and that's why it's so bad.
And because it hits people who have these chronic illnesses. And I know, like, at least in our community in Portland, like, there's a much higher rate of asthma, or before this area was gentrified, the area that I'm sitting in right now, the area that I live in North Portland, where I-5 is literally built, like, houses torn down, neighborhoods demolished, black neighborhoods, to build this highway. And now you have all, and it's the same in some of the other places, where you have black people with much higher rates of asthma than other populations. And if you have asthma, like, and you get COVID-19, you are, like, going to suffer. You're going to be hit hard.
Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking about people who I know in that area that work in the underground economy that don't even have a shot at getting any kind of Trump check because they don't have an account with the IRS. That's how people are going to be getting their money.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're a black woman, sex worker, and you're trans in New York City, and you're already, you know, thinking about your own mortality because every day of your life is a gamble. But now you're in an even more precarious situation because, you know, like, maybe tricks are calling you up and saying, yeah, I know we're supposed to be social distancing, but I got a little money for you and I know you need it. And, you know, put you in a dangerous situation, or, you know, some dirty cop is looking for new prey and just want to knock off some people who they don't like. And now you're another victim of police violence, and nobody's ever going to find out what happened to you. Like, these are the things that are, you know, filling my nightmares when I'm hearing about this stuff, because these are people who generally are seen as undeserving, and it's unlikely that they're going to get the kind of sympathy and respect and solidarity that they deserve in this coming period. And, you know, these are our people. So we have to hold that sadness in our hearts and know that, you know, we have to keep going, even though it hurts, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we have to, especially with all of the, like, scarcity fear mongering going on right now. It's really easy to just look out for yourself. And we see that, like, in terms of everybody scrambling to get unemployment and the lines being plugged up and focusing on that and trying to hoard the supplies, the food, the toilet paper that you need, and literally, like, competing with working class people to get toilet paper so you can wipe your bottom after you go to the bathroom. It's scary. It gives me a really high level of anxiety, and it's hard to look past that when your basic needs aren't even being met. And so imagine what it's like for people whose basic needs already weren't being met day to day in these very severe ways. And understand, like, the message that Alana gave us at the beginning of the show that we brought here, that you are better off when those people are better off. Because when there are systems that can keep the most vulnerable people safe and keep their lives intact and make sure their needs are being met, that means that those systems, if you're better off, are going to be there for you too. And understand that you're
That's to say nothing about the fact that your humanity will be more intact when you know that you are not participating in an economy that is oppressing people and killing them the world over, that's causing so much misery and deprivation. You'll be able to sleep better at night knowing that you are contributing to a society that isn't doing such immense harm in the world.
This interview with AOC was really, really great. I was really impressed. I And I don't know, people love AOC. She's good. She's important. I have been disappointed with her in the past just because she has been like a champion for her community and for like brown people across the country. People were very excited when she was
Puerto Rican.
Yeah, she's Puerto Rican. She's from the Bronx. She is 29, I think, 30 maybe now. She's very, very young. Used to be a waitress, like totally working class. And ran against this like deep-seated incumbent, like centrist incumbent in her district and won, and has now been like a champion for working class people. But again, like the limitations of electoral politics, and I haven't always been impressed with the things that she says, but here she really goes hard. I was really impressed to see that she didn't vote for the CARES Act. The CARES Act is the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economy Security Act, so the bill that just passed that includes the $2,100 Trump check, the $600 a week more than you would normally get from employment, all of these things that, at least to me, and I think to others, if you live paycheck to paycheck and you're going to get unemployment and you just lost your job and now you hear you're going to get some extra money, like $2,000, $600 a week, that's no small thing. So to me, when I heard that, I was like, lit, how is this happening? Well, how it's happening is that in that act, they also passed this, what they're calling a, what Ocasio-Cortez is calling it, a slush fund for Wall Street, for corporate interests, that's bailing them out to get the economy going again, the capitalist economy going again. That is to the tune of billions more dollars than they used to bail out Wall Street in the Great Recession. It's the same thing. Again, it's blowing my mind. I was 12.
Maybe we'll have Occupy Wall Street again or something better.
It feels crazy. Like I feel crazy because I remember like being a 12-year-old when the Great Recession hit and how like
that's right, you were 12.
I was 12 years old and I remember watching it and being so confused and seeing how it affected my family's life. Like I knew I had a friend of a friend who took a friend of like a family friend who took their life because their small business went down because it like and it just devastated their life. Like it was awful. And now to be like just into my adulthood and watch it all happen again and watch them do the same thing again.
Yeah, I mean, people still are not mentioning suicide rates. You know, that's like an unmentionable, you know, in
yeah,
a lot of broadcasts where, the reports on who's dying of COVID are so important to keep up. But what about like, you know, who's dying of capitalism?
Like, I mean, yeah, like there's people who, a lot of people got laid off, but I know people whose bosses were just opportunistic and fired all of them
because they could,
because it costs you less money. Fired all of them
because they can, you know, like that other countries in the world are not allowing bosses off the hook that easily.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
they absolutely can. There's nothing stopping them.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's devastating people's lives in more ways than one. Even if you don't have COVID, most of us aren't going to get it. Most of our lives have been absolutely devastated in some way or another by the ramifications of this and how the government has handled it, not by the virus, but how the government has responded to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but Ocasio-Cortez, I was more impressed with her than I was with Bernie, than I was with Ilhan in terms of how she responded to it. She said that she couldn't bring herself to support the bill because she understood that it was a corporate slush fund, that it would be leveraged to bring $4 trillion to Wall Street, and that and she said, I think that as this goes on, people will understand and they'll see, she said, the asymmetrical support that is going to working class people and to corporations. Because even while that $600 a week, that $2,100 check, if you're able to get it, feels like a lot, it actually is widening the wealth gap. And that money, I think, serves well to keep some people quiet about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, she had a lot of good things to say. She also talked about prison abolition, the issue of people contracting COVID in prisons, which has been important because, I mean, if you catch COVID and you're incarcerated, like it is getting spread around, you are going to contract it. She talked about speaking to, I think, some of the demands of the organizations that Alyssa had previously mentioned. Elderly clemency, pretrial, ending pretrial detention, not arresting people for low-level crimes, crimes in quotes, and placing inquiries to see if there are people being moved to Rikers. Which are serious demands. Serious demands for a Democratic congressperson to make. Like ending pretrial detention is something that is important to a lot of organizers, and that's not abolition, but it is like something significant. So yeah, I was really surprised.
There are also, of course, abolitionist organizations that are doing this work locally, like the Care Not Cops coalition were on Ted Wheeler when he put up his tweet, any questions you have about our response to the virus, let me know and we'll get back to you. And they put it to him and want other people to as well, to demand that he does everything in his power to advocate for prisoners to be released. So I just hope people that listen to KBOO already support the Care Not Cops Coalition, but there is important work being done on that front in Portland too.
Yeah, it's really scary. I mean, it's another site that we need to look at, of like who we're all of our lives are being radically changed in very negative ways by this, and who is suffering the most, because there are people who will not come back from this, like people who work in the underground economy, like people who cannot get any support, like are not able to work, if they are able to work, are being put in dangerous conditions or are incarcerated, so when they get out they won't be able to find a job. If they get out, which they should, but there's no guaranteeing it, if they were to get out, they won't be able to find a job except for an extremely high-risk job, like working at a grocery store, because those are the only people who are hiring right now. So your choice right now, if you're jobless, is to either put yourself at risk for contracting this fatal virus or live on the street, have literally nothing. And if you're remaining in prison, then you're bound to get sick and you're going to continue to live in already unstable, unsafe, disgusting, like absolutely inhumane conditions, like the conditions at Rikers and prisons all across the country.
So I know that people are trying to figure out who to support and where to give their time and energy and money to. So I just wanted to plug the Portland Mutual Aid Fund again, just so that people who have the means can pay it forward, and people who need can know that there's a place that is trying to get together resources for them to tap into if they need. So that's good. Jobs with Justice and the Democratic Socialists of America in Portland have been talking about the unemployment councils that we were talking about last week before our signal was lost.
Yeah.
But, look forward to hearing about that happening here and other places too, people coming together on the basis of their being unemployed and fighting for demands for a better way. There's more caravans that are going to be coming up, so if you have a car and want to drive through the city and decorate your car, honk your horn, share your messages with people who are throughout the city, I can tell you it's pretty fun. I did it, and yeah, let's do it again and again. And I'm looking forward to seeing new ways that people come up with resisting while people are social distancing. Like, this is going to push people to be more creative. So when stuff begins to pop off, just make sure that you support, and we can be in this thing together. Like, I know that it's hard to just keep going yourself sometimes, but if you have the energy to give to an effort that's going on, just, you know, think about giving your time and your energy, because it's needed.
Yeah, and I think it's needed, and like that is the way that we're going to get through this. The only way that something like this cannot happen again is through our own organizing and our own struggle to end the systems that have failed us time and time and again. I also, in that vein, want to shout out PDX Child Care Collective, another organization that's been doing great work. They are an organization that typically serves to provide child care for racial and social justice events, but through all of this has become basically a mutual aid group in terms of providing child care. They've been trying to link up families and child care workers who are out of work to help those families receive care. They have helped to be involved in and facilitate something that me and my union worked on, which is sending Governor Brown a petition to provide stability and safety for child care workers in the state, and who across the country have basically just been, as like all other essential workers, like pushed into the front lines of this struggle against this lethal virus, just saying, all right, this is your job, so it's now your job to fight off this international issue, which cannot possibly be my work. And have been putting up resources on their Instagram for parents who are at home with their kids, resources on how to talk to children about COVID-19. So yeah, PDX Child Care Collective. Follow them on Instagram if you work in childcare or have experience watching children, maybe, and you're healthy and you have the means, maybe see if you can help to provide some care for a family who's in need right now, because I know a lot of parents who are really struggling raising their children and keeping their children busy and educated and healthy under these conditions, and keeping themselves busy and healthy and happy in these conditions.
Did you see or hear the interview also on The Intercept with Chris Smalls, the worker at the Staten Island facility?
Yes. Yeah, I did hear it. I did.
So Chris Smalls was at JFK 8, which is the name of the facility in Staten Island, and went out on strike because there were some safety issues that the workers there were trying to raise, and they were being mostly ignored. And the richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos, sat in on a meeting planning to smear him and to cast him as not bright, and to make it seem like he's the face of the union movement, and to take him down and discredit him. And I guess that's still up in the air. We'll see what kind of dirty tricks they pull out. But he was speaking really candidly on the Intercepted podcast, speaking with Jeremy Scahill. And I hope that people take seriously the workers organizing at Amazon who are resisting, who are saying that the facilities that they work at are not clean and are going to make people more and more sick, and that these are the frontline workers who are being sacrificed so that people can, you know, just like get their prime shipping, you know?
Yeah.
So I just want people to have that on their radar too.
It's just such an example of like how this gap of like wealth and privilege and opportunity is widening through like the CARES Act, first of all, of like the crumbs that we're getting versus the trillions that or the billions that corporations are getting. And also like Amazon sales have increased by like 50% because of this virus. So Amazon, a corporation already run by the wealthiest man in the world, has seen a 50% rise in sales when the rest of the economy and the working class is crumbling. And meanwhile, the workers there are like dying, literally. And it goes back to that discussion of like having empathy and being by the side of people who have less than you, because I've personally heard people talk about how it's selfish for frontline workers to refuse to go to work or to not want to go to work. I've heard parents who have a little bit more money, and this is not a blanket statement, this is like anecdotal, but I have heard a couple parents be like, what am I parents who are okay or doing okay, be like, what am I supposed to do? This is so irresponsible. Thank you so much for making sure that I don't have childcare for my child. Like, people, I saw a video of a nurse who has a cancer history on the Shade Room, follow the Shade Room, leaving work early because they were making her work on a floor where they were treating people for COVID-19, even though she had said that she couldn't do that because she has a history of cancer and is very susceptible and could die if she caught COVID-19. And in the comments, people were saying, well, you're a nurse, you signed up for that, you should be able to do that, that's selfish. Like, these are really the thoughts people are having because people don't know how else to deal with this. But that cannot possibly be the solution. And I really want to keep saying that over and over again. There need to be systems in place for people to have their basic needs met, not just when we have a pandemic, but at any given time. We need to have universal healthcare. We need to have comprehensive healthcare. We need to have basic income, basic needs met at all times for anybody. And that would actually make our economy, this capitalist economy, stronger. But that's not where we're heading right now. We're getting to the end.
Yeah, it's okay if people are not able to stay upbeat and turn your negative thoughts into positive thoughts. Like, I'm not into that movement.
No.
Feel your feelings and don't feel bad about it. Yeah.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, April 10th at 8 p.m. for the KBOO Stay at Home and Dance Party. This dance party celebrates our community while maintaining the social distancing needed to keep us safe and healthy. Co-sponsored by Cedarwood Waldorf School.
Wanna dance tonight.
And in dedication to all the medical workers and other frontline folks out there. Again, that's the Stay at Home and Dance Party, Friday, April 10th at 8 p.m. Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO Saturday, April 11th at 10 p.m. for a special episode of the Youth Randomonium. Right now, you're hearing the dulcet tones of Portland via Sao Paulo singer-songwriter